and to sort of check up and draw the specimen. Your consent is implied because you go ahead and let them draw the blood from your arm, but they may run anywhere from 1 to 38 different tests on it. Most of them have no social implications. The only implication is they'll come back to you and say, by the way, we checked how your liver was functioning and it was doing all right. By the way, we checked this disease and that. This one, the social implications are so great. It was felt that the committee did not want people to be in the position of your physician or your clinic coming back and saying, by the way, while we had your blood out of your arm, we thought we'd see whether you had the AIDS virus in you. And a person saying, with eyes as big as saucers, but I never intended that test to be run. We want, because of the social implications, this test to be done with consent. I am most members of this committee would like any test to be done with informed consent, feel that that's a good norm, but wanted it made very explicit for this particular test.
Other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Ford and Representative
Is this Agron? Just on the amendments or on the bill itself?
Well, let's talk about the amendments first.
Okay.
Representative
Agron. I wanted to clarify a point on the bill, not the amendment.
Okay, let's stick with the amendments. Any other questions about the amendments? If not, we'll go to Representative Ford's question on the bill.
Chris, probably everybody here has been contacted by the ACLU, and they're concerned about Section 14, which defines a procedure and means by which quarantine would be used. They feel that this is a not a protection of the citizen involved in this, but that it is giving the health division and the director outside powers to quarantine in the case of AIDS. And you had made comment on this before. I wonder if you would make comments on that now for the record for today.
I'm sitting here feeling a little concerned about your point, because when you originally heard the bill, you were provided written testimony from the ACLU which indicated support for the bill. The main section on due process is Section 10, which begins on page 4 of the bill and provides an extensive process for procedure should we wish to quarantine or isolate or otherwise deal with an individual who is putting the public at risk. Section 14 is the section that deals with the introduction into the state of dangerous substances, either infectious or toxic substances, and all it changes from existing law is to make explicit that we could invoke these powers where the substance coming in is not an infectious agent, but is in fact a toxic material.
If I had, Chris, the wrong section, but I did receive a call from the ACLU on this. If they're supposed to be supportive, I wonder why, and can you just speak to the issue of whether or not this is giving you any further powers to quarantine.
No, it is giving us fewer powers to quarantine than we have today.
Christy, before you go on, we do have Stevie Remington here, I believe. Would you like to have her come up and
that would be delightful.
Hey, Stevie? You heard the question, Stevie. Do you want to either advocate Representative Ford or set her mind at ease here?
I'm Stevie Remington, Executive Director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Oregon. At the last hearing, we couldn't have someone here, but we did send down a statement, and we are in support of House Bill 2067 because we think legislative history has been made at the prior hearing with statements that this will rarely, if ever, be used for AIDS persons with AIDS. Frankly, we could not answer the question. Because it's spread by casual contact, we don't think it will ever be needed. But we are posed with the hypothetical.
You mean because it's not spread?
Because it's not spread by casual contact, that it probably will never be needed. But there is the possibility that you will have someone who is not mentally ill and therefore committable, who is infected with the virus, and who, out of antisocial behavior, deliberately goes out to infect other people without their knowledge. And we admit that if that has happened, that's not quarantine because they have the disease, but they must be stopped to protect other people. And that's why we can't say never, never, never can you quarantine, but it's the conduct that would cause it. And I think the assurances of what the rules will contain with respect to the safeguards for what must be established before there is a quarantine, we feel confident that on the whole, this bill provides more protection for those who are going to be deprived of liberty than the current law does.
Okay, Richard and Ford, does that answer your question?
It certainly does.
Okay, additional Representative Agrons.
Again, to that tender Section 14, I'd like to have an expression of opinion or intention as to this discussion of toxic substances presenting a substantial threat to public health, and particularly subsection B, which we're talking about conveyances. Some of us are still and always will be pleasantly addicted to tobacco products. And one of the very few civil liberties yet remaining to me, I expect to be thrown out of this building any day. But does this, can this be construed under this section to relate to tobacco products?
No, I do not believe this section could be construed to relate to tobacco products. And I say that very firmly because we've had occasion to look at the definition of tobacco products as separate from toxic substances in general in connection with another request to the agency recently. And it is our attorney's belief and my staff's belief that because there are so many explicit statutes about tobacco products dealing with them in separate ways, that they cannot be covered under general toxic substances statutes like this. So we would not see it in that way, would not intend to use it in that way.
Well, Madam Chair, I was less concerned about the Health Division than about some reformed cigarette smoker who is now a zealot and is searching for some statute in which to further impinge upon my right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
This section of the statute to which these amendments apply can only be invoked under the authority of the Assistant Director for Health.
Thank you.
Not by anyone else.
All right, my mind is at ease.
Representative Van Loon.
Following up that, someone, I believe, at the hearing last time asked you what the definition on page 4, line 36 of toxic substance was, and I believe at that time whoever responded, and I thought it was you, included or somehow out of the conversation we got the fact that that would include any substance. What definition did you give for toxic substance?
The substance listed is a substance that may cause illness, disability, or death to persons who are exposed to it. That is stated there. But it is generally used to mean, and again, it appears in other statutes as well, chemical substances such as pesticides, herbicides, chemicals used in manufacture. Tobacco is not considered under it by the opinions we've been given because tobacco products are covered under other specific statutes. And as I understand, the general rule is that a general statute does not apply when there is a more specific, explicit statute that would pull some substances out from that. This was not intended to cover them, nor do I believe it covers them as we've understood this so far.
If I may continue further. Everything is made up of chemicals.
Yes, ma'am.
And I was just sure we addressed this before when we were talking and it was determined at that time that this related. Where before has toxic substances been included in
The health division, there's
and
another,
your rules.
There's another entire statute which the health division administers on toxic substances and hazardous substances in the state of Oregon that allows us to write rules similar to the Consumer Product Safety Commission. There's another whole, there are volumes of rules and so on that apply. And that's one of the reasons that I think this particular statute doesn't have broad applicability in that area.
Well, can I ask a question first? Christy, I think the intent of questions are, is the health division going to stand out there on the highway and stop pesticide trucks?
No.
Are you going to stop, you know, nuclear materials going back and forth? Do you feel the statute gives you that kind of authority?
No. This statute is used in the very rare instances where there is a substance that is not specifically covered under somebody else's statute, but is causing a threat, such as the pesticide on watermelons that entered Oregon one summer a couple years ago.
Is it your intent that this bill gives you the authority to go into some farmer's barn and check to see if he's got toxic substance?
No, it does not.
Representative Van Loon, is there anything beyond that?
Yeah, I just don't completely understand why this was thrown in with the rest of the bill. Someone testified the other time that they were in favor of the bill up through Section 5.
That was Dr. Shade from Multnomah County, who has problems with the amendments to the quarantine statute. He prefers the present broad authority.
And you and he were in agreement. If I remember, you said you do not basically favor quarantine, and he felt that it does accomplish some things, but you weren't.
I think we both agree on the rare number of instances in which quarantine is used. It's always hard for me to speak for other people, but I believe he prefers the present loose statute in which due process is not spelled out, and he has a little more leeway to sign off on orders, whereas I believe the more restricted version here with due process spelled out is more appropriate.
Christy, could you answer, or maybe some member of the committee, wasn't he the same gentleman that indicated that in World War I he didn't reduce the amount of sex, illicit sex going on, even by locking up 15,000 prostitutes?
That was a different gentleman, but that statement was made.
Representative Van Loon, if you have additional questions.
Well, let's go back to page 10 of the bill, to line 38 down in there toward the bottom of the page. Tell me again in section 14 what that's aimed at. Section 14 through lines 32 through line 40.
The section
watermelons.
This section of the statute is aimed at those I'm dealing with the statute specifically, and then I'll deal with this bill. The section of the statute with which this amends deals with those, again, relatively rare instances in which a person is bringing into the state or moving about the state something which is spreading disease. The original statute dealt with people who were riding stagecoaches while they were infected with smallpox, and was written to give the public health officials the ability to stop the stagecoach, get the smallpox infected person off, and treat them and deal with them and let the stagecoach go on its way without problem and without spreading disease further in Oregon. What this does is update that statute to acknowledge that in some cases the conveying is not just of an infectious agent but a toxic agent. And the only actually specific example that I have that is recent is the one where a toxically altered food substance, watermelons with an inappropriate herbicide, were being brought into Oregon, and that is an instance in which this kind of statute could have been used had we gotten into a situation where we did not get voluntary compliance from the people involved to get those watermelons off the shelves of Oregon. It's not intended to be free rein to just go searching vehicles or go on searching missions, but rather where we are aware of things causing disease to be sure we can stop their movement around the state. It is, again, is a statute, as the quarantine statute, is one of those very rarely used statutes, But when you have an emergency situation, you want to have it there to use it. It is my personal belief that were we to stop a vehicle under this, we would have to meet the same test of need that we have to meet in the due process spelled out in the quarantine section. That is that the burden of proof would be on the public health agency to demonstrate that there is a real disease problem with this substance, that we have tried other measures and stopping the vehicle and going through the conveyance and going through these steps is in fact the only thing left to do.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Van Loon.
Continue on that, going back to the watermelon, since that seems to be the only instance available. It wasn't the health department that stopped those. It was the Department of Ag, wasn't it?
We worked with the Department of Ag. We were the ones who identified the problem, who identified the situation. We worked with Department of Ag, and then in collaboration with them, got the grocers to take the watermelons off the shelves. But the next step was we identified they were imported watermelons, and the issue was to stop them coming into Oregon. We achieved a voluntary solution in that case. But in some cases, you might not achieve a voluntary solution. And as with quarantine, when voluntary solutions run out, you need the statute.
Okay. Representative Van Loon, I do need to point out to the members of the committee that this bill primarily deals with the issue of quarantine of contagious diseases, not quarantine of watermelon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'll give you one more question, Representative Van Loon, but I mean, I would like to deal with the germane issue.
Okay, but I also am very concerned that every bill that comes out of here is right in the germane issues and the non-germane issues. And I think that there's a facility already available in the state of Oregon to stop that kind of thing, and I still have a problem with it being put in this bill.
Okay, Representative Van Loon, I guess the question would be, do you want the Health Division of the state of Oregon to have some possibility of intervening when there's toxic substances out there threatening harm
already,
to the folks?
I think they already do have.
Well, if they already do have, then at best or at worst, this statute would be redundant. It would not, you know, give them a power that they already don't have. So I'm not sure of what your concern is. Unless your position is that you don't believe that the Health Division should have that authority, then that's a different issue. Okay? I mean, I
get it.
Can we go on to other questions dealing with the bill, please?
It occurs to me, Mr. Chairman, that Representative Van Loon's concern is more in terms of the unnecessary redundancy and overlap, perhaps, in some of the stuff that we're legislating, as opposed to it being a danger. Now, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Representative Van Loon, but I think that's the thrust of what you're talking about.
Well, I think the thrust of what I'm talking about is on page 1, line 25, and I think it applies to what Christine Gebbie said it did not apply to, and that's the definition of toxic substance on line 25. Subsection 8 says toxic substance means a substance that may cause illness, disability, or death to persons who are exposed to it, and I still think it covers your tobacco, even though she doesn't think so. I mean, that's her prerogative to think that way. My prerogative is to vote no.
Okay, Representative Van Loon, if by the passage of this bill, this is why I asked Christy the questions earlier, the Health Division starts going to grocery stores and pulling off cartons of cigarettes, it wouldn't take very long for this body to respond, you know, to that. And, you know, I think that what we're talking about is, you know, giving them the authority, if there is some substance, like they were indicated with the watermelons, a way to intercede on that. Now, if they abuse it, we have the same recourse we do with every other state agency that abuses the intent of statutes, namely, one, abolish the agency next time around, or two, change the statute. And so, you know, I understand your concern. I'm not sure that we can beat that issue to death here. Unless you specifically would like to make a motion, which I will entertain, to eliminate that language from the bill.
Well, Mr. Chair,
but I don't think that she can give any clearer an explanation of where the Health Division is coming from.
Okay, and I think that there's an overlap here with the other agencies, which includes the DEQ, who I thought that this pretty much came under, and the Department of Ag, and I don't, we've never, forget it, I'll just vote no, and we'll work on it from there on out.
Okay.
Other questions?
Christy, I've got a question for you. I got a letter from, I believe it was signed by 35 inmates of the Oregon State Penitentiary. I don't know if other members of the legislature received that letter or not, but they were concerned that the passage of this bill and the lax, the fact that there is no testing for AIDS for people that go into the Oregon State Penitentiary poses a danger to them. Would you like to comment?
I suspect it's the same letter that I've received also, or at least a similar one. This may sound a bit repetitive with some answers I've given previously. The mere fact that one enters a prison doesn't alter one's antibody status one way or the other, and the mere fact that one is in prison does not automatically mean one is engaging in activities that might spread the disease. Some people who are in prison, just as some people who are out of prison, practice sex without protection, practice sharing IV drugs, those people will be putting themselves at risk whether in or out of prison. The thrust of our cooperative efforts with the State Corrections Division has been on education, and we are gearing up a special education program just for prisoners to be expanded to cover that. We are gearing up a discharge program that includes probable distribution of condoms as well as educational materials on the assumption that your involvement in activities that might spread AIDS increases after release from prison. And then, as with anybody in Oregon, the test for the antibodies is available through their medical system for someone who is in fact at risk, who has either practiced sharing of IV drugs or has had multiple sexual partners without use of condoms, male-to-male sex without use of condoms. And through their prison health system, that is available to anyone there now and will continue to be available.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Ford.
Along this line, Chris, are you involved in any kind of care or treatment or testing right now for the AIDS cases that are acknowledged at the state pen and the sexual contacts that those people have made while in the pen? Do you know if they're being tested?
The corrections health system follows up on any of those individuals and works with the Marion County Health Department for any outside public health activities or with my agency, and they are handled, yes, in a as thorough a way as is reasonable given the information available and access to the people who might need to be followed up.
Well, Chris, I'm still not satisfied either with your answer to me or your answer to Representative Ford. Folks going into prison, I mean, there is homosexual behavior in prison, okay?
That is correct.
What's being done, you know, I mean, it's all very well and good. You know, we could probably give the folks a lecture every day, don't participate in sex in prison. But obviously it's going on. What's being done to make sure that infection is not spreading? I'm not, you know, from your answer to Representative Ford, I'm still not convinced that there's anything going on.
You know that.
I think to get a more detailed answer of this, you may wish to ask Kathy Knox, who is the Corrections Health Director, to answer some questions, because she is the one directly responsible for health-related activities within the prison system. My staff has spent a good deal of time with her, and I'm answering on the basis of my involvement in those discussions and some follow-up questions I've asked since our last discussion here. The state, through its corrections health system, is not guaranteeing that a person who is in prison
and engages in homosexual sex or in IV drug use will not be put at risk of a HIV infection, of hepatitis B infection, of syphilis, gonorrhea, or any number of other things.
All the others are at least within some degree of control and cure. AIDS is not. Now, let me ask you another question, Chris. Are condoms available to inmates in the Oregon State Penitentiary?
At the present time, I do not believe they are regularly distributed. That question is under consideration right now, and that's a decision that will be made by corrections, not by the health division.
It just seems to me, Christine, that there's something amiss here, Representative Forge.
Yeah, I do. Frickin' Frack here following up each other on these questions. Do I have to ask this Kathy somebody, would you give me her last name again, please?
Kathy Knox is the Assistant Administrator for Health Services in the Corrections Division.
Okay.
And I just give you her name because she knows in a much more detailed way than I do the day-to-day services and follow-up activities that go on there.
But you're concerned in the Health Division with testing.
In part, yes.
And my concern is there are known active final stage AIDS cases at the state penitentiary.
That's correct.
And they have had multiple partners there. I want to know if those people have been tested and if they are continuing to transmit through the facility, if they have tested positive. Can we get a handle on what's happening down there?
It is my understanding, and I hope I am not mistaken in this, this is what I understand, is that if an HIV positive or prisoner, one with AIDS or one not ill, has in fact had partners within the prison system, and those are identified, that those partners would be counseled and offered testing the same as they would in an outreach program somewhere else. In the prison as elsewhere, the health officials are dependent upon the index case revealing who the partners are. Although they may have some additional knowledge in a prison setting, they're still dependent on that individual on interview being willing to answer the questions. But where that is known, then it is my understanding that follow-up counseling and if appropriate testing would be available.
Follow-up counseling is kind of, after the fact is
Well, you can't. Testing at admission to prison won't tell you anything about transmission in there if, in fact, that's the issue. If the concern is transmission within the system, then follow-up testing is what's appropriate. The test in and of itself only gives you a limited amount of information, particularly if you do it right after the supposed contact, because there is a 6-week period after infection where the test is still negative. So that there are a lot of reasons why just routinely testing people either at admission or at some specified point doesn't really get at what I think you're after and what I'm after too, which is elimination or reduction to as close to zero as possible any spread of this virus within those institutions.
Representative Kirk.
Chris, what I hear Frickin' Frack saying is that they want a two-stage approach. They're asking about a two-stage approach. One prior to and one after one has been within the walls, to try to curtail some of these situations that is now happening there. So are you saying that there is not that presently going on and there would be a problem with if you were to propose something of that nature?
Yes. Admission screening, which is I think the first thing that's been asked about, has not been adopted in any state with as low a rate as AIDS as we have here in Oregon, primarily because when you test for the antibodies in a population that is primarily uninfected, the most of your positive results will be false positives.
Okay.
And so that you will have spent a lot of resources
to have found almost no true cases of the disease. And that is generally true of Oregon's population, including the population entering its prison facilities. So that's the reason we don't recommend routine testing at admission. The testing where you're following up a specific chain of infection, person A may have given it to B, who may have given it to C, who may have given it to D, is what I previously referred to as the follow-up counseling and testing. That is something that is increasingly available throughout Oregon, and that kind of counseling and testing is available within the prison system to anyone who is identified as having been exposed to the disease and therefore in need of follow-up.
Representative Curry.
Chris, if there are known qualities, known data that in terms of practices or activities, and we know that as a result of these known qualities, in terms of the possibility, if you will, of carriers, then it would appear to me we wouldn't want things to get to epidemic proportion or get to a high level of proportionality. What can we do to prevent? And I hear you saying education, but to give a further, to put another variable in there in terms of trying to secure and maintain a low level of these cases, why not? Why not for the testing?
The two groups that would be most